Good evening. Welcome to the February edition of Council Connection. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. This month, we just happen to be broadcasting on February 2nd, which is Groundhog Day. And I wonder if that means we'll see an early spring or if we're in for six more weeks of winter. Regardless of the weather, we've got lots to cover this month. Frank Ventura will tell us about our spring conference, which is coming up at the end of March. Sharon Strokowski will talk to us about recorders, not the digital kind, but the musical instruments. And we'll begin, as we usually do, with a report from President Brian Charlson. Good evening, Brian. Welcome to Council Connection for February.
February already.
Yes, indeed.
So we're all getting queued up for the ACB mid-year meetings in Washington, D.C. Actually, they take place in Virginia.
Right.
Because that's the location of the ACB national office and the hotel that we use.
Right.
But we've got seven Bay Staters going to that.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be the ACB board meeting, followed by the ACB president's meeting, then the legislative seminar, and then the day on Capitol Hill.
And that, I believe, if I remember correctly, is the 25th, 26th, and 27th of February?
Exactly. Saturday president's board meeting, Sunday president's meeting, Monday legislative seminar, Tuesday day on the Hill. Well, they just announced the subjects today.
Okay.
And they include continuing to battle forward on the Marrakesh Treaty that deals with an international treaty allowing countries to share accessible format books, those kinds of things,
right,
between one another.
Mm-hmm.
We got very close to getting that to happen before the change of the presidency, but now we get to start over again to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of very friendly members of both the House and Senate, but it requires the Senate to confirm the treaty, but it first has to be sent to the Senate by the president.
Oh.
So we've got some work ahead of us, but I don't think it's going to be an insurmountable thing.
It seemed that way. It seemed in the announcement they indicated that they didn't think that was going to be a difficult one to push through, and I hope they're right, because this is something that we've been looking for a number of years, from what I remember. I know this was talked about several years ago, and it will certainly make life easier for everybody, easier for us, because I guess that would mean, for instance, that we would have access to some of the books recorded in Canada, perhaps, or does
Canada,
it work that way?
The UK,
mm-hmm,
South Africa,
mm-hmm,
New Zealand, and Australia,
yeah,
all would be possible sharing parties.
Right.
Not all of them have signed yet either.
Ah, okay.
And then, of course, we'll be able to get more Spanish-speaking titles.
Mm-hmm.
We have a large Spanish-speaking population here in the U.S. of A.
We certainly do.
So we'll be able to get those from Spanish-speaking countries, and
mm-hmm,
including the country of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
They have a spectacular collection there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So there's lots of pluses all around. So
yeah.
I anticipate that will be not, you know, nearly as contentious.
I would hope not. I mean, I frankly can't see any negatives to that.
So we're also dealing with making sure that government entities provide material in alternative formats. It is the law of the land. The difficulty is getting federal agencies to actually do it. Such wonderful agencies as Social Security, Internal Revenue Service.
And isn't part of that a push for web accessibility in as many forms as that can take?
Yeah, that's part of the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, if you're a person receiving Social Security and you get notifications in the mail,
yes,
that are in lovely two-dimensional print. And
oh, those blank pieces of paper. Yeah.
No, those lovely things, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that will be one of our activities.
Mm-hmm.
We'll continue to be pressing the demonstration project dealing with low vision aids, that be covered by
Medicaid, right?
Medicaid,
I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I
and
I know
think
that
also has a better chance than people would expect, because it is demonstrating that service would not be financially burdensome to do, and it's better to test out the idea before you try it.
Yes.
So I think we'll get some support from both sides of the aisle on that one.
Well, that would certainly be good.
So those are the three top ones for this year round.
Okay.
We will be spending a lot of our time just building relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's such a massive change in Washington, D.C. right now, not just the presidency, but having both houses run by the Republicans.
Yeah.
And also doing so in a manner where they feel that anything that they pass doesn't have to have more than a simple majority to do things. We're going to have to remind them that they're supposed to be representing their constituency and that we are part of that constituency.
And, of course, that's always the issue, to bring that to the fore, no matter who's in power. I mean, I guess hopefully, well, it appears in some ways that perhaps we've had more sympathetic participants in this process before, but that's not always the case, is it?
No. Keep in mind that the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law by
George H.W. Bush.
So that's what's happening in late February.
Mm-hmm.
Then
and of course,
one of the things that I find really interesting about being part of ACB is there's so many layers to it. Start off simply in the world of your local chapter, you know, just your community,
right,
that kind of thing, or local special interest that you might be involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is connected to your state affiliate or your national special interest affiliate, or both in our case, both with our student affiliate and our guide dog affiliate,
right,
guide dog user affiliate, rather. Yep. Got to be careful now.
Yes.
The actual users that are in the affiliate.
Yes, the guide dogs do not as yet have an affiliate of their own, although I understand they're working on that.
There you go. And then that, of course, is connected up to the national,
right,
ACB, mm-hmm, and that then moves on up to the international with the World Blind
Union. Yeah.
And one of the jobs that our program committee has given me for our upcoming state convention, the last weekend in March, is to speak about the World Blind Union and how their activities are part of our activities. It's amazing what that one little dues check covers.
Yes, I will be looking forward to hearing your report in March to enlighten us.
There you go. Well, and again, it's one of those things. I've been very, very lucky to represent ACB on the national level and as a broadcaster on ACB radio.
That's right.
In Thailand, in Canada, in Australia, and in the United States.
And, of course, ACB radio will be streaming our convention in March, as they do, as they have every year for the past couple. Not the entire convention, but all of Saturday, I guess.
Correct.
The Saturday, the daytime, and the banquet.
Correct.
There's
a whole long, long day of that. Registration, I understand, went out today in Braille and large print.
Okay.
As well as electronically.
Yep.
So we have a link for people to go through that process. It's really quite doable.
Yes, it is.
Go to...
At this point, I'd say if you got the announcement in the mail, by all means, go to the link there. And if you, for some reason, didn't get that and you want to register, perhaps the best way to do that right now is to leave a message in our mailbox at 617-923-4519. And I'll give that again later on in the program, just so that if you weren't paying attention or didn't have your electronic pencil out, you can get it out and write it down then.
Exactly, exactly. So what else is going on, Steve? We've got issue of the Baylines coming out soon.
Yes, we do. In
we've
fact,
got Baylines Express coming out on a regular basis.
On the 25th of the month, and that's there been coming out with astounding regularity. David is doing a stellar job with that.
It's so good to have something actually come out on schedule, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. He's very conscientious.
You do that with this program, but boy, it's a hard mistress, is a calendar.
It can be. It can be. It really can.
So, and we, of course, have Blind Day in the works. We just got through putting together some of the final, not so much the date. The date's been established.
Yeah, the date's been set in cement for a while.
16th of March, if memory serves me correctly. And then, but we're working out the program.
Mm-hmm.
Want to make sure that we let our state legislators know the importance of funding blindness-related activities, including the libraries, the Commission for the Blind,
right.
And for that matter, TIC, which is funded now through Department of Elder Affairs.
Okay. In many ways, it's kind of similar to what is going on with the mid-year meeting on a national level, except that it's on the state level, that we're just reminding people that we're still here and we exist and there are things that we need and we want them to notice.
Right. It's a quality of life question.
That's right.
Absolutely, a quality of life question.
Absolutely.
So you're going to be pulling together some other things. One of the things people, I think, in Bay State really need to understand is all the bodies involved in making things happen. You've got several people working with you on the publications committee. You've got a number of officers who are given specific responsibilities to mm-hmm. do, like we mentioned, David Kingsbury with Baylines Express, but and Deanne Elliott is as legislative chair, and
Mary Royan is the
membership chair. But again, all of these people are working for Bay State Council of Blind to make sure that the interest, not of themselves personally so much, but as of the blindness community as a whole.
Well, and let's not forget that it's not only the officers. There are people who work quietly behind the scenes. People like Chris Devon, who's the chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, and Carrie Scholar, who is also on that committee. And neither one of them are on the board, but they are working just as hard as if they were.
Exactly, exactly. So it's not, although people out there may think, you know, there's that Brian Charlson, the president, he's the voice that we recognize at this point. I'm just kind of herding all these folks hopefully in the same direction. And they do some marvelous stuff. They've done it for years, many of them. We'd like to get some new faces in there. So if you're listening to this program and you'd be interested in serving on one of our many committees doing, like I say, good work out there, please just give us a call. Let us know what you're interested in. If you're not a member of Bay State Council of Blind and would like to become a member, Steve already gave you that phone number. That's all it takes. Dial that number, and we'll get back at you and help you become connected. We are very interested in seeing about developing chapters other, you know, in addition to the ones that we currently have, South Shore chapter. We have the
Charles River
chapter, student group, the guide dog users group. We'd love to rejuvenate our North Shore chapter. We'd also like to get back out into Worcester and out on the Cape and down in Springfield. There's lots of folks out there who could benefit through association one with another, and all of them with us here in our chapters locally.
And so much of what's important really is the networking. I mean, whatever else we do, just the fact that we've all been through certain parts of this experience, some of us know about certain aspects of it, and others know about completely different things, and just to be able to get together and talk to each other and discover the common ground that we have is a big part of what we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Support one another.
That's right.
Support one another from our experience for those who haven't had that experience and vice versa. I've learned so much from other members of the Bay State Council that made my life better. And hopefully I've been able to contribute from time to time.
Well, I think you have, Brian. So just before we wrap it up here, you can be reached in a few ways, I guess, and maybe it would be good to share that with people.
Right. The safest way to reach me, because everything gets piped to other places in one form or another, is to go straight to my one-size-fits-all, brian.charlson, that's B-R-I-A-N dot CHARLSON at Carol, CARROLL dot ORG. Brian.Charlson at Carol.org.
Now, for those who do not have email, can they contact you
by
phone?
Always give a call. I've got an iPhone that's near and dear to my heart. Every time, once in a while, it vibrates and I wonder whether it's the old ticker doing it. But anyway, That number is 617-775-2541. Again, 617-775-2541. Always love to talk to folks, see how life is treating them, and see how I might be able to help them out a bit.
Well, once again, Brian, thank you for all that you do, and thank you for being on the show with us again this month.
Let's hear it for the Council Connection.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. And don't forget that our show is also available as a podcast on your Victor Reader Stream. Even though it's only been a couple of months since our fall conference, our spring conference is almost upon us. The convention committee has been working hard for the last several months to put things together, and Frank Ventura, the convention coordinator, is here to tell us what they've done. Good evening, Frank. Welcome to the show, and I guess the convention elves have been busy.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's always a pleasure to be on the show, and yes, the convention elves have been working hard to bring us on another year's spring convention, which... looking forward to. It's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, me too. It's what dates? March 24th, 25th, and 26th, I believe.
That is correct. It's March 24th, the 25th, and 26th. So it's the afternoon of the 24th. That's a Friday.
Yep.
All day Saturday, 25th, and the morning on the 26th.
Right.
So definitely we've got a full program ahead of us. We got a lot planned for our Friday afternoon session. We have a combination of wellness and technology presentations, everything from yoga for blind to blogging and social networking. So we have probably a good four or five different presentations on Friday afternoon that should be very enjoyable. And I usually those are pretty well attended, and that's a good thing to see.
Yeah, and of course, the nice thing about the Friday sessions is that those are the things that we don't usually have time to cover in the Saturday session, which is of more general interest to everyone. I enjoy the Friday sessions. Last year we did a couple of kind of interesting things. Amateur radio we covered in one session, I remember, and I think you took us on a shopping tour, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, that was 2 years ago, yeah.
Oh, 2 years ago when you bought those socks. Are they still holding up, by the way?
You know something? They actually are still holding up.
That's
a good choice.
Either that means they were really good socks or you're just not wearing them.
No, they were good socks. Well, with a little help from my friends, I picked the right socks.
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. So Friday we will continue with some, like I said, in the afternoon we'll have our general interest sessions with the technology and personal interest. Then we'll have a little bit of a break for, you know, people to relax for a while. And then later on, the BSCBS, which is the Bay State Council of Blind Students group at 9 p.m., they will be holding their meeting. And if anyone does not wish to go to that meeting or obviously not involved with that group, there's a hospitality suite, which will be open from 7 to 10 p.m.
Great.
On Friday evening.
Great. I plan to be hanging out there at least a little bit. And I understand that this year we've got something new in the hospitality room that we haven't had before.
That's a little bit different than in past years. I mean, last year was an experiment, and it was a good experiment. It turns out there was a lot of interest in it. So at 7 o'clock, 7 to 8, there will be some refreshments served. There'll be some... probably some quick little sandwiches and maybe even like a pasta bar or something along the lines like that. That's not set in stone yet as to what the hotel will actually come up with for us. And there'll be a cash bar.
Mm-hmm.
Then at 8 o'clock, we'll have a little bit of entertainment.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we haven't had before. And who have we got on tap, or is that top secret for the moment?
No, we're going to let the secret out right now.
Okay.
One of the rising stars in New England comedy scene, Mr. Mike Fahey, who's very funny. He'll be entertaining us, so it's a pleasure to have him.
Okay, and that I am looking forward to that because I always enjoy comedy, especially good comedy, and if you say it's good, I'm going to trust that and be right there to get as many laughs as the next person, hopefully.
I hope so, too, yeah.
Yeah. Now, is there going to be registration on Friday night?
Oh, there will be registration, yeah. So that 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. window on Friday, there definitely is early registration.
Okay.
So people who do come in on Friday, then anyone else can register on Saturday morning if they don't come in on Friday.
Right. Now, of course, one thing I should point out is that if you've waited until Friday or Saturday to register, that's going to kind of count you out of the lunch that we're having on Saturday afternoon. Is that correct?
Okay, we haven't gotten to that yet, but yes, so let's talk a little bit about the Saturday program, and we'll get to that point that you just made, yeah.
Okay.
So Saturday morning, we'll be hearing from our president, Mr. Brian Charlson. He'll give us his annual report, and then we'll have a few other business-like presentations. One of the most important one is from Mr. Tony Stevens, which is our National Director of Legislative Affairs. He works for ACB National, and that's a very important thing at this point in time because we are experiencing a lot of changes in Washington, D.C. that do affect policies and procedures for that affect all disabled people, and including the blind. So I think it's very timely that we'll be hearing from Mr. Stevens, and it's a pleasure to have him.
Yes, and of course that will be timely too because ACB will have just finished up their mid-year meeting at the end of February, so perhaps he'll have some information to share that resulted from that.
I hope so, and I'm looking forward to hear what he has to hear. I know it's there's a lot of trepidation, rumors, and nervousness, but I'm sure he'll cut through that and give us the actual real information that we need to know. Yeah. So moving on with Saturday, we'll also hear an update about the Mass Commission for the Blind from Mr. Paul Sainer. He's the commissioner of MCB. Then we'll probably move on to what you were talking about, which is our Saturday lunch program. This year, one of the things that we're doing to make it easy on people, I know in the past there's been some difficulty getting to the restaurant, the waiting to be served, and then ordering food, having it take quite a while, then having to wait to pay your check, and then tip the waitstaff. So one of the options on the early registration, if you register prior to the conference, is that you could order one of the two lunch choices that we'll have, and it'll be paid as part of your registration fee, so it'll be brought right to you in our Saturday meeting, and obviously you don't have to bother with tipping or paying on the spot. So that's something that's going to be I'm actually quite excited about that because that has been a little bone of contention sometimes with people trying to get their lunch and rush back to make it for the afternoon session.
Right. And, of course, this is very similar to what we have at the fall conference where the lunch is served kind of in place, so you don't have to move very far. You just wait for the lunch to arrive and eat the lunch, and then you're back in session.
Yeah, definitely. And food comes to you instead of you going to the food.
That's right, right.
Yeah.
So,
okay, so moving on Saturday, we also have some presentations, about some of the new technology that's coming down the pipeline as far as Braille goes and how it may apply to the National Library Service. We'll also be talking a little bit about the World Blind Union. And after that, we'll move into our business session where we will have our resolutions and voting as we normally do as our custom on Saturday afternoon.
This year, I think we are picking board members.
Yes, there's four director positions on our board, and those are the positions that are up to election this year.
Okay. So, and that's how we do it. On alternate years, we do the officers, and the years we don't do the officers, we do the directors. So that, and that's the later part of the afternoon after 3 o'clock. And I want to emphasize here that any member of ACB, any member of BSCB is eligible to attend that meeting and vote. If you're a member in good standing, you can, of course, certainly come to that, even if you don't come to any other part of the convention.
Certainly, at 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock business session, any person who is a member of Bay State Council of Blind could attend, and obviously, since you're a member, you can vote in the election as well. So thank you very much for bringing that up.
Right. And what happens after that?
Okay, after that, we have a little bit of a quick break until 6 p.m., and we have a little cocktail hour. Again, you know, another chance for a cash bar. And after that, then we will have our evening presentation, which is one of my favorite parts of the whole conference, which is our banquet. We're very privileged to have Mr. Blair Wong as a banquet speaker this year, and also we'll have some award presentations. And I won't mention who is getting the award because that will ruin the surprises. So
no, we don't want to. No, we don't want to do that yet. That you have to be there to find out. And of course, we will on Council Connection. We will broadcast the banquet probably in April.
Well, oh, that's great! Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And TIC may do the same thing. They often do. And that brings me to another part of it, which if you can't be at the convention will be streamed live both on ACB Radio and on the Talking Information Center Network.
Certainly, the Saturday session, all day Saturday, will be streamed live, and
right.
They will also be recording on Friday afternoon and Sunday mornings. Yeah.
Yes, because all of that goes into our convention archive, and that's how we get some of the material that we use right here on Council Connection as well. So, and then, of course, after the banquet is what, for many of us, is kind of the main event of the conference, and that is our auction.
The charity auction, which helps support the cost of the conference, which is always a lot of fun. By that time, people are a little bit more relaxed, and you finish dinner, and that, like you said, it becomes a lot of fun. We definitely have a lot of good laughs, and there's some nice things people bid on, and as usual, I thank everyone who brings items to the auction to be auctioned off. That's very generous of everyone.
Well, and I can tell you from past experience that there are all kinds of things, ranging from food, all kinds of culinary delights, both homemade and store-bought. And, of course, at the other end of the spectrum is technology. And we've got
Absolutely.
Plenty of that, too.
Yeah. So yeah, there definitely is quite a variety. Sometimes there's even jewelry and homemade craft materials, and there's also some, like I said, some technology, some
sports
items.
Yeah. Sports memorabilia. I know a couple of years there have been baseballs auctioned off and some other things, autographed, things like that. And that's definitely a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that will last for the end of the evening, and by then I think everyone's pretty much ready to turn in for the evening.
I would say so, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And then it's on to Sunday morning.
Sunday morning, yes. If you've never been to a spring conference before, there's also a Sunday morning breakfast where Bay State Council of Blind treats you to breakfast, and it's hosted by our secretary, Mr. Jerry Berrier. And it's just to get to know new members, people who have never been to a Bay State conference before. And we definitely encourage anyone who hasn't been to one before to definitely attend that.
Absolutely.
And then Sunday morning, we'll have some wonderful presentations from some of our Bay State Council of Blind members again. We'll be talking a little bit about different ways people adjust to blindness, and also some of the efforts that our hardworking legislative committee is doing right now, and a few other surprises, and then we'll wrap it up with the reports from our committees, and that will be the end of the day. That will take us to midday, and by then I think we all pretty much will be ready to pack it in.
That certainly says that this conference, like many of the others, is going to be an exciting one. I'm personally looking forward to it, and I hope that I'll see many of our listeners at the convention, and if not, I hope that thinking about this year's convention may give you incentive to go to next year's if you've never done it before.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Frank, for giving us a look at what's happening at our spring conference in March.
Thank you, Steve, as usual. It's a privilege and a pleasure.
And don't forget, you can register for our spring conference by leaving a message in our voice mailbox at 617-923-4519. And if you're planning to stay at the Burlington Marriott, the deadline for booking your room is March 3rd. You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbofma.org and look for the Council Connection. At one time or another, most of us have thought of taking up some challenge that we didn't do when we were younger. Sometimes we do it, sometimes we don't. Sharon Strakowski was one of those people who decided to pursue her ambition, and she's here to tell us about it. Good evening, Sharon. Welcome to the show, and I think you're a first-time guest here, right?
I am, and I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, too, to have you on. Tell us a little about yourself since you're a first-timer.
All right. I've been in Bay State Council of the Blind for a long time and have thoroughly enjoyed all the projects that I've been involved in there. As for something about me, I work for the Mass Commission for the Blind since 2001. I've been a vocational rehab counselor, which is a job that's ever-changing.
Yes, yes.
But it is primarily working with people who are out of high school now. I don't have the high school students anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But people wanting to go to college, who are looking for work, and a lot lately of people who are trying to retain their jobs and are losing sight because have just become legally blind and trying to figure out how to make that happen.
Sure.
Which is very exciting to me. I really enjoy working with the job retention people because too often in the past people have lost their jobs.
Well, and I think that's the
assumption.
Yeah, and that's the assumption on the part of the employer as well as the employee that
absolutely
you're not going to be able to do the job once you lose your sight.
Right, absolutely. And honestly, some jobs, of course, you cannot continue to do.
Yeah.
But a lot of it you can.
Yeah, if you're a truck driver, you're not going to be able to continue that.
That's right. So I'm a case manager in a mm-hmm. sense, and I make sure that all the services that people need mm-hmm. happen. Mm-hmm. So I work with a lot of constituents, and that's what keeps it interesting.
Yeah, now you live in the Worcester area, right?
I do. I live in Worcester.
Uh-huh.
I've been here for a long time now. 20 mm-hmm. years, probably, thereabouts.
Oh, okay.
And it's definitely home. I like to think of Worcester as a big, small town.
Yes, yes.
Even though it is a large city. In fact, I think we're number two
mm-hmm.
Behind Boston. It doesn't often have that feel to me.
No.
And what I enjoy about it is the various things I've been able to become involved with in the cultural community, in the church, in education. To me, it just feels really perfect. Sometimes transportation gets to be dicey,
yep.
especially the minute you get outside of Worcester. Things
yeah.
can go downhill very quickly.
Yeah.
But it is my home, and I'm where I'm going to be, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And now you're originally from Maryland?
Delaware.
Right.
I've been in Massachusetts for a long time. I lived in Leominster for quite a long time, which is northern Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
And I was laid off from a job and kind of seized the opportunity to come to Worcester, which I knew had more to offer.
Sure.
And I never regretted that decision.
Wow, that's good. Nice to be happy in one's work, and not everybody can say that, but it's nice
right.
when you can.
That's right. I mean, work is work. It has its drudgery sides. Every job does.
I used to say that work is a four-letter word, and I guess in a way it kind of is. On the other
right.
hand, we all need money, and therefore we all need work.
That's right. Yeah. That is true.
But that's not why you're here tonight. You've done something that I think a lot of us think about doing, and some of us do and some of us don't, and that is to take up something in your adult life that you'd never done before.
That is true. I am 65 and very proud of it.
That's right. That's right.
And I have
just experienced.
That's right. That's right. I have taken up a musical instrument, the recorder. A recorder is a predecessor, in a way, to a flute. So whereas a flute has keys on it, the recorder has just holes that you put your fingers on, or even you sometimes put your finger on half of a hole to change the octave to go from da to da.
Oh, really?
Like that.
It's interesting that covering half the hole would
half
do that.
Half the hole. Yep, that's what it does. And so, and also instead of blowing across a hole like you do on a flute, you blow into the mouthpiece. There are four recorders, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass.
Oh.
And at this point, I play soprano and alto. The tenor uses the same fingering as a soprano, but because it's a bigger instrument with a lower sound, the holes are farther apart, and it takes a while to get your hands adjusted to doing it.
I would imagine the technique of producing the sound is also different because it's a bigger chamber.
Very different.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
And I've only played with it a couple times. It's something that I may try to do this year.
Mm-hmm.
The bass actually is big enough that you need to sit down to play it.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's cumbersome to put it together. All recorders are taken apart so that they can go in a case,
mm-hmm.
and also so that they can be cleaned periodically, because what happens is, because of your constant breathing in it,
sure.
it collects saliva,
moisture and
and everything.
Yeah.
And then there's a quick little technique. If it starts getting wet, as we call it, you go, and you don't do it that loud, but you can do it quietly in between a measure, and it clears it.
It sounds a little like emptying the spit valve on a trumpet or a trombone.
I would imagine so. I've never experienced that.
Although that's a pretty noisy process, and I know because I used to know some trumpet players that would do that periodically, but not something you did in the middle of a concert.
No, whereas this, you can discreetly do it very quickly and quietly, which is great.
Now, before you took up the recorder, did you have any other musical background? I mean, you didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to play the recorder, or did you?
No, I've been a choir member for a good part of my life,
mm-hmm.
so I have the basics of music. I know what the notes are. I know a lot of terminology about music, and I've always been a musician in some fashion. But sometime, it might have even been as long, early as 20 years ago, I heard the recorder, and I thought, I love that sound. I want to do that. But I just didn't know how to go about it or honestly have the confidence to give it a try. But then I kept talking to a couple people at my church who told me about a wonderful music school here in Worcester called Joy of Music Program. And they said, just go for it.
Well,
so
yeah.
I finally did. And because I know C, D, E, F, G, I mean, I know that kind of thing.
Sure.
I learned the notes pretty quickly. And the fingering,
mm-hmm.
but then the hard part is producing a worthy sound.
Now, of course, one of the things that we inevitably get into, and I know this from having played the piano, is what to do about music. In my case, I learned Braille music when I was in the second grade, and so I could read music, but of course, everything had to be memorized.
Yep.
There's no such thing as sight reading for a blind person.
No. And, you know, before I took up the recorder officially, I went to a recorder society meeting, just to see people play. And I have to admit, I came home and I cried.
Yeah.
Because they're sight readers.
Sure.
And they were able to do things that would take me a long time to do.
Yeah.
And you're right that memorization is the only way we can do it. I have some Braille music, and I've looked at some recorder Braille music, but mostly I've used my Victor Stream, and my teacher has put the melody on the stream. She doesn't have to tell me this is a B, this is a C.
No.
I can figure out the notes easily enough.
So you have some kind of pitch ability, whether it's relative or perfect, I guess it doesn't matter a lot.
Right.
But
I do, and I'm very blessed to have that because I can tell what she's doing.
Right.
And every once in a while there'll be an odd note that I'll say to her when she's done, what was that note? You know, a sharp or a flat that
mm-hmm.
I didn't recognize. And normally she'll put the music on the recorder slowly.
So she plays a recorder to give you the melody, or does she play it on a piano? Or?
No, she plays the recorder.
Okay.
And every once in a while, there'll be a little weird thing where if you play da, 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 sometimes it doesn't come through exactly right on the recording. I'm not sure what about the sound of it is, but sometimes I've gotten that a little bit wrong.
A different tone?
No, I've got the same tone, but just did I get the right number of notes?
Oh, I see. So it kind of blurs.
It blurs. It gets a little blurry. But most of the time, it's pretty good. So I get a really good idea of what it is. And then sometimes, if we can snag somebody, she'll play the recorder and the other person will play the piano or harpsichord so that I hear the whole thing.
And it's important to get that kind of total picture of the music in your head.
Absolutely.
My teacher used to do that for me, too. He would play the next section of the piece that I was going to learn so that I could see how it would fit together. And then I'd go home and memorize it. Now,
before we continue, I want to say that one thing I've tried to do, too, is to find the piece on YouTube.
Yes.
And then even though I'm not going to play it exactly like they are, that really has helped me.
Yes.
To really just feel the piece. So I'm grateful for YouTube for that.
Absolutely. There's an awful lot of stuff on YouTube.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I used to run into is after I memorized the piece and I would come back, I would often find that there was one measure that I didn't quite get the notes the way they were written on the page.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever run into that?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially if there's what's called ornaments, which are little extra doodads with notes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wouldn't get them in the right, either the right sequence, or I wouldn't get them on the right beat.
Right.
Of the measure.
Grace notes and trills and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm not a good triller, I have to say.
Well, and those things are not explicitly written out in the music either.
No, they're not.
There's a little mark that says, or at least in Braille music, there's a mark that says this is a trill, and it's up to you to decide what that trill should be.
Right. And what my teacher has me do, because my tendency is to want to do it too fast and then it's sloppy,
mm-hmm.
she has me do the trill really slowly and it sounds terrible. Da 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 da. And it's to control your fingers and your brain.
Right.
By the way, the metronome is your friend when you're a musician.
Even though you may not think it's your friend.
Yep, it sure is.
Yeah.
And what that is, if people aren't familiar with it, it's a device that goes do, 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 do. It doesn't say do, do, but
no.
It's a clicking sound.
Yeah.
And if you have to play to that beat, it keeps you really clean and learning something, and then you can try it a little faster, and then a little faster.
And, of course, what it also does is it makes the beat very steady, which you may or may not be able to do in your head. And I used to find that I thought I was playing it pretty steadily, but then when I played it with the metronome, it was easy that I could kind of feel myself drifting ahead or drifting behind and having to catch up and get back on track. And I didn't like that feeling, but it's important if you're going to get a good sense of the rhythm.
That's right. And in a way, it's sort of soothing. It's like it takes some of that burden off of you if you pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm learning anyway.
Okay, well, metronomes used to be mechanical. Now I guess there's electronic.
Yeah.
A lot of them are.
And, right. So we actually did, with my metronome, we put some markings on it with tape and different things.
Oh, okay, so that you can set the tempo for whatever
tempo
you want it to be. Yeah.
They
usually measure that in beats per minute.
That's right.
And beats per minute to either a quarter note or a half note or an eighth note, and that's all important to know because, you know, if you could get, say, 60 beats a minute, which would be about tick, tick,
tick,
tick,
tick.
Tick.
Tick. Yep.
But if that beat is, if you play that beat to a whole note, that's one tempo. But if you play it to a 32nd of a note, that would be a different tempo, a very different tempo.
Very different. Right.
So it's important to take all of that into account.
It's fascinating.
Yes, it is. So are there any other kinds of accommodations that you've had to work out with your teacher to learn the material or anything like that?
I play in ensemble once in a while, which is really fun. That means soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and a lot of times percussion, too. So I've had to learn my part, and then we practice all together. And the first time that we practice, it doesn't sound too pretty, because it's sort of like a little one-upmanship. Everybody's trying so hard to play their part,
yes,
and to make sure they're doing it right,
mm-hmm,
that we're not blending very well at all.
Yeah.
And she'll say, gentle. And then we kind of say, oh, okay, we're together here.
Now, does she actually conduct that the way a conductor would, or does she rely on the people in the group to kind of find their own? I guess that's not as necessary, is it, if you're playing in a small group as it would be if you had a full orchestra?
She doesn't do a conducting, but she might go, she'll set the tempo.
Right.
Like sometimes if we have a drum, which I like, they'll do the tempo, they'll do a measure before I come in.
Sure.
Or she'll very quietly go 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, when I play myself with a pianist, now this fascinates me, by looking at my body language and I nod, she gets a sense of my tempo very quickly.
Okay.
Which is, I don't quite get it, but I know it's true and I know it works.
Well, that's all that's important as long as it works.
That's all that's important. And also when I'm going to cut off a note at the end.
So the pianist is following you, not the other way around.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which is what a good accompanist should do.
Right.
And I think I had told you when we were talking before this interview that one time I blanked out and I just lost a measure. I couldn't.
Happens to us all.
And she just went right along.
Yeah.
I think she kept playing and then I came back in. Because that's what, you know, that's what you do.
and of course, that's an important part of it. You can't get hung up in the things that you missed. You just have to keep moving. And as long as you do, you can usually salvage things. But if you start obsessing over the mistake you made, the rest of it will be a mess, too.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've gotten more relaxed over the years about playing, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a good thing. Other accommodations have really been around the time that I have my lesson.
Right.
And they've really worked hard to have me at 6 o'clock to, mm-hmm, 6:45 so that I can come from work and then go home after that on the paratransit.
Yeah.
So
that you're not getting home at 10 o'clock at night to eat supper.
Right.
Yeah.
One semester, we couldn't work it out, and I didn't have a lesson till 6:45, and it didn't make sense for me to go home after work. So I'd come, and I'd listen to podcasts or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was getting home at 8:30 sometimes, depending on how many rides were on the system with me.
Yeah, you're going to be awfully hungry when you land in that door.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'd always have a snack or something in the afternoon, but we were able to work it out right now and definitely try to keep it at 6 for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm an adult, it's not expected that I have a lesson every week. First of all, most people can't afford a lesson a week.
Yeah.
And also, as adults, the practice time isn't what it is when you're a kid. So
funny thing about that, life gets in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I usually have one every other week. But like for this coming semester, there's 3 Fridays that I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So I already told the office that so that we would work around it.
Uh-huh.
So my teacher is there anyway on Friday, so she's very flexible. And there have been times when she said, you know, I'm going to be away visiting my grandchildren or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, so we have a great rapport. We email each other, text once in a while if something happened or whatever.
Right.
But I think the main thing is that we have a lot of respect for each other. She is amazed that I memorize, because that's not something that she has had to do as a sighted musician.
And most sighted musicians do not have to do that.
Nope. And on the other hand, she's learning the harp, which is just a love of hers. And sometimes we mess around and we play, and I can tell her, play this chord, play this chord. And
sure,
that doesn't come naturally to her.
Yeah. Yep.
So we complement each other.
Yeah.
You know. I always say, she's the teacher, but I'm the boss.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of true, and I'm sure that she has a version of that she would say about you, that
right,
she, in fact, is kind of the pupil because she's learning from you.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she's kind of learned how I learn things. And
right.
What I've learned that it takes much longer to get something really well to perform
yes.
than I thought it did.
Yes.
I mean, and I can maybe memorize something in a week. Doesn't mean I really know it or
no.
that I really could play it well.
What I used to find is that memorization was the first step, and then you started working on the dynamics of it, the, you know, whether you play the phrasing, whether you play one note louder than the other, and if so, how much, and that all had to come after the memorization.
Right. Memorization is just plain notes. That's
right.
It.
That's it.
You know?
That's it.
And I've come into lessons and said, Madeline, that's my teacher, I've said, this sounds absolutely horrible, the way I'm playing it right now, and I know it.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to do, so and that's why she's there.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. I'd like to speak a little bit about the whole music school experience.
Sure.
Because I know that a lot of people take private lessons, and any way you can do it is good, but I have loved being part of a music school. This particular music school, in general, has about 400 students at any one time.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's quite large. Most of them are children, but there are adults.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I'm never going to know everybody at the music school, but I've gotten to know a few people on the staff, the two directors, and various people here and there. I come for faculty recitals that they offer sometimes. And then twice a year, there's an opportunity to perform. We have what's called Jompathon, Joy of Music Program. It's a fundraiser, and it goes from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and every student in the school who wants to is encouraged to perform.
Okay.
So as you can imagine, it's quite a feat to get the scheduling
yes.
done.
Yes, yes.
Because a lot of kids have soccer and
oh, yeah.
God knows what else on a Saturday, you know, besides doing this thing. So you go and you perform, and it's very well timed. You have to submit. Are you playing for 3 minutes? Or are you playing for eight? So you may be given a time of 10:08.
Oh, I
like
see.
Paratransit.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And they really keep it moving, for sure.
Well, they have to, otherwise,
you'd
run
out
of time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so sometimes when I'm finished performing, I'll sit for an hour or two and just enjoy the variety. I mean, you hear everything from twinkle,
yeah.
you know, a beginner violin student.
Yes, yes.
Up to
with all that that entails.
Yeah, right. And but the idea is to be respectful, that whoever's performing at whatever level is doing it to the best that they can.
Well, because we all had to start out somewhere.
Absolutely.
And it wasn't pretty.
And it wasn't pretty. And the music school has been able to refurbish their recital hall so that it's a really amazing space now. They did a great deal to make the sound better. They enlarged it. They air-conditioned it. And so it's really a pleasure and an honor to perform there.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be doing three Renaissance dances. That's the combination of soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and percussion. And then I'll be doing two short movements of a Vivaldi piece with the pianist. The other performance is in June, and that's a recital. And that's a little different in that, whereas at the Jompathon, people come and go all day long, in the recital, you're there for the duration of a couple of hours. And it's usually people that are receiving lessons on that given evening.
Oh.
So the expectation is that no one is going out of the room.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of times I've performed with the ensemble at a Christmas thing, and also on Palm Sunday, we've played at a church in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do play at my church on occasion with our pianist. So performance, like it or not, is the engine that keeps you moving.
Well, of course. In a way, and that's kind of the goal in one it sense
is.
Anyway.
It is. It is. So being a part of this community has been a real enrichment for me. Even though it's hard work, and sometimes I'm like, oh, I got to do these extra rides and, you know,
yeah,
all of that. That's actually the hardest part, I think.
Well, we're kind of drawing to the end of our discussion here. So do you have any advice that you would offer to anybody that's thinking of making this kind of a leap into the unknown?
Well, I think just try it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But it's amazing as an adult. There's some difficulties of being an adult learner in that it's slower. But also, if you're self-motivated, which why would you do it and pay for it if you weren't, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Nobody's,
yeah,
you know, cracking the whip and saying you have to practice.
Well, that's right. And as you say, if it, I guess the way I would approach it is, you know that you may never attain the heights of the professionals.
Oh, no.
But
no.
The idea is not to be a professional. The idea is to do something that you enjoy and do it for that reason and that reason alone.
Exactly. Just like the name of our school, Joy of Music. That's what
right.
It's all about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Sharon, it's been a real pleasure to have you here on the show, and I wish you the best of luck with your various endeavors in this field. Hope all the performances go well. I don't want to say break a leg because that sounds a little destructive, but I think
right.
You understand the sentiment.
Right.
And it's been great having you on here.
Thank you very much. I have enjoyed it too.
That'll just about do it for this month's Council Connection. If you have any comments about the show or questions, or you would like to register for the upcoming spring conference in March, please leave a message in our voicemail box at 617-923-4519. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, and I hope you'll be back again next month when we return with another edition of Council Connection. See you in March.